This is August 2nd, 1984, for the National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History 2, Sylvia Busis and Eleanor Mermelstein, on the third interview with Harry L. Katz. Harry, before we started taping, since we anticipate this will be our last session together, we reviewed some of the things that we had talked about, and you wanted to fill in some aspects of early life in Canonsburg. You had some things you wanted to tell us about the rabbi in Canonsburg, and then some things about your wife Ruth's background that we hadn't gotten before.
Coming to Canonsburg, some of the things that came to mind, which I had forgotten about many years ago when I was down on Fifth Avenue, as Nathan Savage, who was an educator, and was blind, and he was married to the daughter of Ellen Bogan. They came into the office to get some materials, and it was just after Pesach, and I was just overwhelmed by how Elliot really conducted the Seder so well, and I was remarking on the modern pedagogy was so much better than the old, because he was the head of the Hebrew school and Sunday school system for B'nai Israel back in the 50s. And I was remarking about how much improvement there was in modern pedagogy because Elliot was doing so well. And then I said that compares very favorably with how I was brought up. That I had a Rabbi Zelixon who used to have a sharp stick, and he'd stick it into our ribs if we didn't do right, and he drew blood, and he was mean. And he really wasn't a good teacher in that respect. And Mrs. Savage said, "Yes, I know, he was my father."
Oh, my goodness.
I could have jumped in a hole if it was there.
Well, we all get trapped like that sometimes.
Last month I was in Canonsburg had been there for a long time, and they were tearing down all the houses. They tore down our house, and they tore down Becky Cohen's house. Becky Cohen is the mother of Jesse Cohen, who was the head of the Federation.
Was that her home when she was a girl?
When she was a little girl.
What was her name then?
Her name was Balbersky. Her father had owned a furniture store. And then her husband, and she married a fellow named Jack, who built up that furniture store into a fabulous big business. And their son was Jesse. And Jesse was just a real very young kid when I was there. They lived on the same street. And we both played in the same back alley. But now it's nothing but a field the way it was 200 years ago. Another neighbor there was Milt Pinsker. He owned a clothing store right next door to our office, to our store, hardware store. And Milt was very much disturbed about the fact that he had to work on Saturdays, so he had the courage to close up the store, just got rid of it, and he moved into Pittsburgh and opened up a wine place with Jewish artifacts, and you know where Pinsker's is now.
It really is an institution.
But at that time, he was selling clothes next door to us. I wanted to mention, in Canonsburg, I'm going to give you a paper that was published in the Daily Notes in 1976. That's a newspaper in Canonsburg, which talks about Katz Brothers Hardware and how it started in 1910. I already mentioned that to you, but I'm going to give you that.
That's wonderful for us to have. Thank you.
And while we're talking about Canonsburg, I also came across a publication. I'm going to give you a copy of it, a historical paper. And what's interesting here is in 1935, the Log College Preservation Committee, consisting of 11 members, all of them are now deceased except the chairman, Harry Katz. So I'm going to give you a copy of that right here.
Thank you.
And I also came across something I never knew I had, and that is the letterhead of the Log College Preservation Committee, which I was general chairman.
There you are as chairman.
And of course, you remember that was a Presbyterian landmark, and what's significant is that a son of a Jewish immigrant should be the one to save that particular building. That was the beginning of W.J. University. The other thought that I wanted to come to was the period of time when I was in early in Pittsburgh down on Fifth Avenue, and this is the article which started the name Killer Cats. I did not cook that name up. I never did like it. I cringed at the idea, but the newspaper and the reporters started it, and it was a good advertising gimmick, and most people liked it. And even to this day, I can, anybody past 50 knows who Killer Cats is, and I used to get letters addressed to Killer Cats, Pittsburgh, without any address
and
any zip code, and they came to me without a mark. That shows how smart those fellows are. I'm going to give you this paper, which is a reprint from the Pittsburgh Press in 1947. Well, this one's a reprint of 37, and that's Pollock, the man who sold me the business. He did the county courthouse in 1937, and then 10 years later, the roaches got pretty bad, and they called me back, and here's a picture of me doing the county courthouse again 10 years later. We did the whole building from all floors, and that was a, from that time on, I was able to get other business because of my having done that. Now, during that time, I had a place of business on Lower Fifth Avenue, and some person, a friend of mine, was traveling, and they found this book here, which was a collection of photographs all over the world, and the picture that they took of my place down on Fifth Avenue showed the picture of killer cats, and the expression must have triggered his interest, and so that was a picture that's in this book, which was listed in the Library of Congress, as you can see here.
Right, and you've and given us all
I'm
the information
about it.
I'm
a picture of
too.
That was in
Wonderful.
That book.
Wonderful.
And the that covers what I had to say about Canonsburg fairly well. I've already talked a good bit about that.
And you mentioned some things about Ruth that you hadn't told us before.
Yeah, I hadn't told you a little bit about Ruth. She was very, very much a part of my life, and she tolerated an awful lot, especially when we built the shul using her house. A real reason we built it, I think I told you, is when people started roaming through our house into our bedrooms thinking it was a public place. And when that happened, why, we just had to get out. And the shul was built more to get people out of our house than anything else. I wasn't as magnanimous as people think I was. Anyway, Ruth has a terrific background. She was a graduate of Temple University in journalism, and she can write very well, and she was helped the professors with in English. She's a good grammarian, and I should use her more than I do in my writings, but as much as I can, I have her check my papers, and she's very good. She was president of Hadassah for 2 years.
Where was that?
In a group that's around here. That took her an awful lot of time, and she was worked on the newspaper for the whole district for a couple years. I wish she was here to talk about that. That took a lot of her time. Doing the publication, the organ of all the groups, and she worked in my office all the time up until Freddie died, and then she stopped. She did a real good job as bookkeeper and typed all the invoices and everything else for many, many years. So she was a wonderful partner, and made possible for me to do this. She just tolerated all these endless hours that I spend in so many of these other projects. And when I go anywhere and I drop everything to go collecting an insect, when they go somewhere, she doesn't object to it. I know some other woman wouldn't appreciate that. And she's a loner enough that she can make out not having my company. She reads a lot, but mostly she tolerates all my mishigaiases. When we went to Century Village, I got involved there. That's a community of 50,000 people, 90% Jewish, and they were just starting a new Orthodox synagogue, and I was a charter member of that, and spent a little bit of time I had down there painting and fixing up and preparing the new shul that they had, which was really a storeroom. There wasn't that many belonging to it, and there was that many. They weren't young enough to do the work, so
yeah.
I did a lot of the work to prepare the place. And now it's a thriving, flourishing, functioning thing.
What's the name of that congregation?
That was the Young Israel of Deerfield. But we're also members of the conservative group there. And I was not a charter member, but I was one of the early members. The first thing I did, the first day that we got there, I joined the shul. And of course, that was good, because after that, there was a waiting list of there was so many people wanted in, they couldn't. But that's where we go for the high holidays. I defer to Ruth for that, because men and women sit together, and it's very beautiful there, and a very good rabbi. And I enjoy both of those synagogues. I feel like an Arab with two wives. I love them both.
You go down that early that you're there for the high holidays?
We make sure we go there for the high holidays, because Ruth likes it. She has, since Fred died, she has never gone to this synagogue here. She don't like to face any of the people there.
It
brings up the bad memories. So she feels more comfortable in that shul. So we make sure that when we go down to Florida, it's just in time for the high holidays there. So she sent away for the tickets and so forth. And we will be enjoying the high holidays in Century Village and the Deerfield Beach synagogue. The other thing that I hadn't talked about was some of the honors that I got, which I really didn't ask for or expect, but since this is devoted to that, I might as well talk about it. One of them was an award, the Frederick Melsheimer Distinguished Service Award of the Entomological Society of Pennsylvania. This is a brand new honor. They just created the honor.
Who was Frederick Melsheimer?
He was the first entomologist in Pennsylvania back in the early 80s. He was in the Revolution. He came from Germany as a Hessian to fight for Britain, and he was a prisoner purposely, and he didn't want to fight because he was a minister, and he was an entomologist, and he was a very important man in the early days in entomology, and started really the entomological movement in Pennsylvania. And so this Entomological Society of Pennsylvania is a group of professional and amateur entomologist in Pennsylvania, and I was very active in that group. I brought them in dozens of members, and I was a treasurer for a while, and program helped with the programs, and in many ways, unofficially and officially, did them a lot of good. So they felt compelled to do something for me, so they created this Melsheimer Award. I don't think anybody else has gotten it yet, but they will reserve that for who they think has done a whole lot for entomology in Pennsylvania. One of the things I did was create an award. I called it the Elko Award for the best graduate entomologist in Pennsylvania. Nobody's ever done this. So we've had seven of them already, and these students really try hard to get that award, because some of them got jobs because they got this prestigious award, the best graduate entomologist in Pennsylvania. I had a $1,000 bond that I the Duquesne Light, which I donated to them, and the interest from that takes care of that, so I never have to worry about that ever. And it's really not the $100, but it's the idea that that they strive for. I wanted to make it $50, and Ruth says, "Oh, it's embarrassing. You can't give $50." So I said, "Let's make it $100." And so to make it $100, I gave them this $1,000 bond, and so I'm very proud of that and what it means. So I'm going to give you a copy of that particular award. Here it is here.
Okay,
the next award I want to talk about, this is Pi Chi Omega. Pi Chi Omega is a fraternity of degreed entomologists, people, entomologists who have a degree, who also contributed very heavily to the industry. It is not just graduating. You have to do something important. You have to be a teacher, you have to write a book, you have to be an important person in the industry. And so this is a very elite group. And when I got a copy of their membership roster and I saw who the other honorary members were, I was flabbergasted, because it's the greatest people in overseas of entomologists, who's who in entomology. And so when they gave me this award, I was really honored, because I never even went to college, and here this is only for people with the highest degree.
That's wonderful recognition.
So I'll give you a copy of that, and this is some of the literature. It was very highly publicized all over, the resolution whereby they gave it to me. This was reprinted in the Entomological Society of Pennsylvania. They felt compelled to say about that. So I'm going to give you the resolution that they got from that. Okay, it was also in the Pittsburgh papers. Then the other thing that I'm proud of is my membership in the ARPE. That's the American Registry of Professional Entomologists. And that is a, there's only about, in this category of structural, in the kind of urban and industrial entomology, there's only about 250 in the whole United States. So I'm very proud of that membership. And I got that because I had spent so many years as a member of the American, of the Entomological Society of America, and because I had published so much literature in entomology, they broke the rules and gave me a membership in this thing, and that's the equivalent of being an architect, having a stamp, you know, an engineer or a medical doctor and so forth. So in a court of law, my testimony has significance because of this paper. So I'm very proud of that particular thing. And in the Pest Control Association, I was the secretary from 51 until 80, when I was no longer a pest control.
That's a long tenure,
operator.
Harry.
Yeah, and that was listed in the Ratcatcher's Child. I think I showed you the book.
Right. Yes, you did show us.
And there's one page that listed me each year, and that fills up the whole page, because that was kind of embarrassing. And I was lived and breathed the Pest Control Association, and did them a lot of good. And they gave me a special award, a Hall of Fame award. I don't have it here, but that, I don't know where I put it. That was a big plaque. And that was also created in order to give me some honors. A little bit embarrassing, really, in a way, because I don't do any of these things for any of these honors. And I think I might have mentioned to you that I started the Poison Council in Pittsburgh back in 1955 or 56.
I'm not sure that you did talk about that. The Poison Council?
The Poison Center.
Okay.
And I went to see the Dr. Cheever, the head of the medical school at the University of Pittsburgh, and he said, "Yes, we need that. And yes, I think we'll put it in the children's Children's Hospital. That's where it belongs, and so that's what they did.
Is that like the forerunner of the yuck stickers?
That's
that,
it.
That they,
that's, that's the very much so. That I was the beginning of that. And they gave them the first books because they had no money. And I was on the staff. At that time, they had a staff of experts who they called when anybody was in trouble. And I'd get a call in my home because I was on that list. They didn't have any books, and some child would get poisoned with rat poison, and they wouldn't know what to do. So I would get a call, and they called Dr. Henry, who was the expert at the Carnegie Museum on Carnegie Museum on poisonous drugs, poisonous plants, and they had an expert on drugs, new drugs, and so forth. So that's how they work for a few years. Now it's kind of fancy. They don't need any of those experts. They have books and everything.
Well, that was a real service to the community here.
They made a real business out of it. Then the other thing that I did a whole lot was a Swaver. That's an organization of amateur entomologists connected with the Carnegie Museum. And every fourth Monday of the month, we would have a meeting in the Carnegie Museum on the third floor. And for about 20 years, I'm the one who got all the speakers. And I was able to get the fantastic list of speakers, people from Penn State. Any visiting dignitary, I got him to speak. And we had, if you didn't go to school, you've got an education just listening to these speakers. I've got Dr. Blum from Penn State talked about nematodes, brought us up to date on nematodes. Somebody else, a fellow Dr. Gay from Australia, gave us a talk on termites in Australia. These talks were absolutely fabulous. And most of many of these people became very, very great later. But for 20 years, we had delightful things. We went out on field trips, and we had Arnold Malus and other great people teaching us how to collect and make significance of a bug and of a plant and a rock. And when we were out on the field trips, and we went pretty far away, Blue Mountain, and 100 miles, 50 miles away, once a year, we took cars with a lot of kids, and you'd be surprised how many youngsters became physicians because they got started in the biological life sciences with this Swaver Entomological Society. I could name
was that named for someone Swaver on staff at the Carnegie Institute? Or
That was first, it was the Western Pennsylvania Entomological Society started in 1901. And then it disbanded in 19 during World War One, and then it started up again in 1951, and they called it Western Pennsylvania. And then when Swaver died, he was the curator of insects and spiders at the Carnegie Museum. They named it after him, so it's Swaver Entomological Society. And I came on the scene in the early 50s. And immediately entered into the spirit of it, and nobody else did it, so I took over, and I was secretary for countless years. But mostly my main job was getting speakers and sending out notices, and we had a very thriving community, and the climate was just delightful for a youngster who was interested in entomology. I had a place to go. And we conducted contests for kids for the best collection of insects and pictures. We're still doing it. Then, I don't know if I talked to you about being a charter member of the Jewish War Veterans here in Eastmont.
No, I don't think you did, Harry.
And last week, or last month, there was a... an award that they gave me for being a charter member for so long. But I really wasn't too active in that. But I'm very proud of my membership and supported in every way because they're militant and really are not ashamed to be activists in Jewish causes. And I really feel that they're doing an awful lot of good. They're the ones that built the home out in Monroeville. for senior citizens, and they take an active role.
Is that a non-sectarian home?
It is, but it is very much so. There's very few Jews in it, but it's but they promoted it, and they do a lot of good there for senior citizens.
Excellent project.
And I've also, in the B'nai B'rith, I'm a charter member of the East Borough Lodge of B'nai B'rith, but I've never held an office, but they do a lot of good, and I'm very proud of what they do. My interest in that goes back to when I was an ACA fella, and I talked about that in 28, and then when I got out of that, I was secretary of the B'nai B'rith Lodge, organized it in Cannonsburg, and it disbanded as soon as I went into the Army. One of the early memories I have was an experience with Danny Kaye. He came to Pittsburgh to the put on a show at the Stanley Theater, and he had a cane. Oh my God, I forgot to take this. I was going to take it. He had a cane which he picked up from Sir Harry Lauder when he toured England and Scotland. And Sir Harry Lauder was a famous comedian who had an old... I want to check it out. This was one of the last shows that Stanley put on, Stanley Theatre put on in the 50s. And he had just come from England with this precious gnarled cane, which was the trademark of the great comedian Sir Harry Lauder. He was worried about it because it was ancient already. And so he called the Carnegie Museum to see what they had to preserve the cane so it shouldn't get rotten. And they didn't know what to do, but somebody there saw an ad of mine on the new wood preservative, pentachlorophenol. So he called me if I could do it, and I was just delighted. So I made a solution, and I worked very late that night and treated his cane with material. When I brought it back, he asked me to come backstage. And I introduced him to Ruth, and he looks at her and says, "You sleep with cats?" That was one of his standard jokes. And he was a delightful person. I just watched him behind the scenes. He had Georgia Gibbs was on the program with him. And I was real proud of that.
Oh, that was a great experience.
Okay. I don't know, among the, coming back to Penn State, the Penn State University and the pest control industry, I didn't mention this. I'm the oldest continuous attendee who unbroken every year for the last 30 years, I guess, that I attended the conference. They have an annual conference, which is 2 or 3 days. At Penn State, and that's where all the pest control operators come to get new information. They have very good speakers, the best that they can get. And recently, for the last 10 years, I've been one of the regular speakers there on a different subject all the time. And in the main entomology building of Penn State, in the lobby, there's a glass cabinet. I haven't seen it yet. They tell me that it's there. And in it are artifacts of our industry, the first sprayer, the first mask, the first everything. And they're very interesting how primitive they were. And on the little plaque on that glass cabinet is a sign dedicating that to Harry Katz.
Oh, my goodness. You've had a lot of dedications, Harry.
I was really, really surprised. Well, I guess that comes from being dedicated so much to the industry. I've just lived the industry and spent a lot of time with it, and I still do. To me, pest control industry is a exciting discipline. People are disturbed very much by pests. It's no different than having an insect or having a disease in the body. It's just that our property and our peace of mind is in trouble when we are surrounded by creeping, crawling things. So the peace of mind we give and the money we save by avoiding the destruction of precious resources is important. And people are very, very worried now about chemicals and getting hurt and so forth. So our industry is not appreciated properly. It's a segment of public health which should be recognized that much. 10 years ago, I gave a speech in Israel when I was there before a school of pest control operators. And in Israel, pest control